Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here. And from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Here's one New Hampshire story that flew far below the radar amid last year's election noise. A new law requiring the state and local school districts do way more for students with dyslexia. Once called word blindness, dyslexia affects more kids and adults than you might think. That's because many overcome it, going on to live happy, successful lives. But doing so often requires talented help, catching the signs early and finding specialists who understand how to work with and through the disorder, and that can be a challenge. Today in The Exchange, understanding dyslexia. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have four guests. Ann Eaton is here, reading tutor at Parker Academy in Concord, where she specializes in helping students with dyslexia, and also lobbied in support of that dyslexia law that I mentioned, and her daughter has dyslexia. And Ann, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Also with us, Dr. Travis Harker, family doctor at the Family Health Center in Concord. His daughter has dyslexia. And if you want to see a short video that he made on his family's experience, you can go to our website, nhpr.org/exchange. And Dr. Harker, always good to see you. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Also with us, Renee LeCain, owner and director of Language Literacy and Learning, which helps students struggling with dyslexia, including those referred by school districts. And Renee, good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And also with us, Marisol Vincent. She struggled with dyslexia as a child, but found help at a school specializing in dyslexia. She went on to college and now has a career. And Marisol, welcome. It's good to meet you, too.
Thank you.
Well, and Marisol, I did want to start with you. When did you first realize that you weren't catching on to books the way that other kids were?
I would say when I was asked to stand up and read a paragraph out loud, which happens a lot in school, I would struggle with just a couple words, sentence, and pretty much stop and was asked to sit down. So I kind of realized, oh, I'm probably not doing as well here. And then, you know, with other classes, same thing happened with history books, you know, in poetry books, I'd be asked to read a sentence, you know, and they would go around the table and I would always pretty much stutter or kind of stop myself just because I really wasn't understanding what I was reading.
That sounds mortifying.
A little.
In public. How old were you when you started to realize, okay, I'm not getting this the way other people are?
8.
Yeah.
I think.
At what point did somebody, Marisol, and you don't need to give me the exact date, say, you know, Marisol, you're not stupid, right? Because a lot of kids with dyslexia think, I'm stupid. Mm-hmm. You're not stupid. You just have dyslexia and we can help you.
I want to say it was probably Anne here and a family friend of ours, Olga, who kind of sat me down after many parent-teacher conferences that my mother had and kind of spoke with her about what they thought was going on with me.
What did that feel like to have somebody say, no, Marisol, you're not stupid, you just have this problem?
I can't quite remember, yeah. Honestly.
Yeah.
Trying to think back, it, you know, can't really describe. It was like, okay, it's good to know.
Right.
I'm going to go play.
Right, you're 8 years old. So, Dr. Harker, this sounds very similar to your experience with Paloma, your daughter. Just at first, you and your wife thought, look, Paloma, just focus. You're not working hard enough.
That's right. My experience as a student was if I wasn't doing well on something, I just needed to work harder, spend more time with it, memorize my flashcards, and I did great. But with Paloma, it was in second grade we had a teacher who said, you know, she's a little behind in her reading, and I think we should give her some help. And so that teacher was phenomenal, and I helped us identify that there was an issue. And so we pursued work with the school so that they could help us identify what was going on. And they gave us resources in third grade, and that was not very helpful because they didn't identify what the problem was. And dyslexia, you know, I don't have dyslexia, but people describe it to me as it's almost like a bad cell phone connection between your brain and the words on the page. You can see them, but they just don't make sense. And so for Paloma, when she was trying to read, that's what she was getting, a bad connection with the page in front of her. And the reading instruction she got in third grade was pretty much just drill, drill, drill. And they encouraged us to keep pushing her as well. And that was really the wrong approach. We were working so hard and not recognizing that Paloma was working really hard and not making the gains that she should have been making. And it was when we identified her as having dyslexia at the beginning of fourth grade that things really clicked. And for Paloma, she said she really felt like, okay, there's a reason why I'm struggling, and there's something we can do about it.
Well, let's hear a little bit from Paloma from that lovely video that you made, Dr. Harker, about your family's experience. Here's Paloma just talking about what it felt like when she was a little kid and realized she wasn't getting it like the other kids were.
It started in first grade. They would have a section where it would have a giant bookshelf full of thick books, and there was like a little stand where there was like paper-thin books, and I would be reading those. I felt so mad at myself. I was just like, I can't read, and I was like falling behind in schoolwork.
So that's Paloma Harker, again, describing her experience with dyslexia. And, you know, Renee LeCain, it's so sad to picture Paloma looking at those shelves of books, and everybody else is reading the thick books, and she's reading the thin books.
Oh, absolutely. And this is a story I hear every day, day after day. And it is, for the students, it's frustrating, it is isolating, and it's embarrassing. You know, these are bright kids who are not getting what their friends and their classmates seem to be getting with ease. We know our dyslexics are not only working, they're working hard, and oftentimes harder. So they are putting in the effort, they're putting in more effort, but many people do think that it is a lack of motivation.
How often do kids with dyslexia think, well, I guess I'm just stupid?
I see it all the time. Really, until they can get that label and understand what dyslexia is and understand that they do bring so many other things to their learning, but yes.
You know, and we're going to talk a lot about kids, but you first got interested in this working with adults. Tell us a little bit about that, realizing that, you know, some of the adults you saw who were struggling actually had dyslexia that just went undiagnosed.
Well, thank you, Laura. And that's the truth. Early on in my working career, I worked as a vocational rehabilitation counselor and then later shifted over to workers' compensation. And in both those jobs, I was working with adults who needed to make career changes because of injury or illness that made them unsuited for the work that they had been doing. And every now and then, not all the time, but every now and then I would encounter these obviously intelligent people who were having a terrible time retraining because they were functionally illiterate. And at the time, I knew nothing about dyslexia beyond the common misconception that it was something about reading backwards. But on the occasions I was able to hire tutors to work with these people, one fellow comes to mind in particular, just a delightful gentleman in his late 30s, had some young kids, and he's a truck driver. And he came to me kind of hat in hand and said, you know, I've always felt I was probably, he used the word retarded, because I really can't read. And it's been my secret. I went to school and they sort of pushed me through because I helped a lot with, you know, chores and stuff. But I can't read, and I'm going to lose my job because I can't read the signs. And they're going to give me a new route, and I can't read the signs. So at any rate, later on in workers' compensation, the same thing. You know, when someone can't go back to their usual job, you try to find retraining options, and they were so limited. And I didn't have good solutions for these people, and it bothered me. So it wasn't until our daughter came along and was struggling in first grade, second grade, and we literally stumbled onto a reading tutor who specialized, we later found out, in dyslexia. Thank goodness we found that out, because she said to our daughter, the great reassuring thing is, you will learn to read and you will learn to write, but you will learn differently. And we're going to use a different approach.
And the label helped then?
Well, her teachers did not recognize dyslexia. They assured us she was going to be fine in time. Just wait, be patient. She's young. But, you know, the meltdowns around homework, the report cards coming back that were so upsetting to her because they weren't very favorable. And we knew she was bright and we knew she was engaged. We just knew that there was something, there was a disconnect somewhere. We didn't know what it was. Later, this reading tutor, again, was so fabulous because she recognized within a few sessions what our daughter was experiencing. And she said to us, yes, you know, you definitely have a kiddo here who's got a learning difference. And I can help her. She needs this kind of instruction, and this is why it will help. It's not going to hurt anybody, but it will help her. And it did.
The exchange number for you to join us with your questions, stories, comments on dyslexia, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Whether you have a child who struggled with dyslexia or you're an adult who has found some way to move beyond this, let's hear from you. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Again, email exchange@nhpr.org. You know, Marisol, Dr. Harker talked about with his daughter. At first, he said, well, look, Paloma, just try harder. Focus. Come on. Let's pull out the flashcards one more time. Did that happen to you?
Yes, it definitely did. You know, I was raised by a single mother who definitely needed help and got me help to the best of her ability. And there definitely was multiple people saying, you can do it. Don't worry. You've got this. So I definitely can relate with her, you know, that upbringing of you got it. You can do it. You know, everyone's going to encourage their child. But it gets to a certain point where you kind of realize yourself it's not working.
You know, Anne said something. People used to think that dyslexia was reading backwards, and a lot of people listening today may think that's still it. What does it look like to you?
To me, letters flip upside down.
Upside down.
S's look like fives sometimes. So I'll see the letter S and read the word five out loud. So I can definitely tell people that I read a lot slower. My fiance can tell you if I read a cooking recipe out loud, I sound like I'm struggling, but I'm really just looking at every single word very carefully so that way then I can produce it verbally. But for me, it's like looking at code sometimes, especially if it's a book about art history. There's lots of numbers, dates, commas in strange places, little semicolon, you know, just all this different stuff that just kind of throws me off. So I have to kind of highlight those things, separate things, have a piece of paper and go line by line. It's just a lot on one page for me and can be kind of stressful. So I kind of stop and have to breathe and then be like, all right, it's just words. They're not going to attack me.
Well, I'm a very fast reader, actually, which is probably how I'm able to do this job because I can absorb a lot of material really quickly. So when I see a sentence or a paragraph, I kind of, you know, I sort of suck in the whole thing. But you, it sounds like you're seeing every little teeny piece, every apostrophe, every comma, and that would slow you down.
Yep. I see every part of the word.
I wonder if that's an advantage, too, though, at some level.
It is.
In some other context.
Yeah, I definitely internalize the information a lot differently than most people do, I feel. I read a sentence over and over again, and that sentence could mean five different things to me, where it could just mean one thing to someone else.
And that's useful.
Yes.
To look at the world in a slightly different way. And I can see you want to jump in, and then we've got some calls and emails, and all sorts of people want to jump into our conversation.
Just a quick comment that I applaud Marisol for explaining that. In my experience, right? Because I think that's one thing we do know about dyslexia is that each individual does experience it a little bit differently. Dyslexia exists on a continuum from mild to severe. And if you talk to different people, you'll get different descriptions about what their frustration is. It all falls into the umbrella of dyslexia.
They used to call dyslexia, Renee, I'll turn to you first, word blindness. How does that sort of old-fashioned term strike you today?
Well, we've learned a lot about dyslexia, so I think that kind of reminds us that the initial view was that it was due to a disruption in the visual system, when in fact it is not. Excuse me. We have learned so much about the language system, and we now know that this is a language disability. And so the symptoms that we see begin in school when they have difficulty reading words, but it actually begins before that. It's a difficulty with the brain's sensitivity to the sounds of the language. So it's a language disability, and it manifests itself in different ways as the child progresses through school.
So 150 years ago, people thought it was a visual problem? Your eyes were literally not making the right connection with the printed words on the page.
Yeah, exactly. So they just thought it was some kind of disruption because everything else seemed intact. So these people are speaking clearly, they're intelligent, they are smart people, but for some reason they can't get those words off the page. So they attributed it to a medical condition, a neurological condition, perhaps a visual issue.
How do we see it now, Dr. Harker?
So we really see it today. Dyslexia is a brain difference. There's neurodiversity in how all of us develop, and there's some strengths with that and some challenges that come with that as well. But it's a lifelong condition. So it's, your brain is the way it is. And you mentioned at the beginning of the show that some people can overcome it. And I would rephrase that to say that people develop strategies to learn to read better. People without dyslexia can look at a word and know what it is. People with dyslexia have to break it down and use specific strategies in order to really understand what it means. And that's been transformational for my daughter. When she got that kind of teaching, so at the end of fourth grade, she hadn't been getting much of that. And she said, I'm done. I hate it. You can't make me do this anymore. And then when she started getting that, within 3 weeks of getting the what's called multisensory or Orton-Gillingham-based education, which uses the other senses to help them learn, like touch and hearing and movement to help them learn how to read. When she got that, after 3 weeks, she said, you know, Daddy, I think I might like reading. And it's because—
Wow,
it's
what a moment, huh?
It was, I almost teared up because it was so emotional for her to actually say that she could like it. And now she reads for pleasure because she has the skills to do it. But it was getting the right type of teaching really made the difference for her.
Well, so neurodifferentiation, is that what you said,
yeah,
Dr.
There's,
Harker?
Like,
yeah,
there's neurodiversity. So the
neurodiversity.
Some of us are tall, some of us are short, some of us are very athletic, some of us are more artistic, and some people have brains that that don't process words in the way that other people do.
Let's take a call. This is Ken in Portsmouth. Hi, Ken. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Longtime listener. I love your show.
Good.
Yeah, I was diagnosed with dyslexia when I was in fourth grade. I'm 58 now. They really didn't, you know, they didn't have any special programs for you at school. I was lucky to get some good tutors. But what I kind of resent now is they kind of lump all reading disabilities into dyslexia, where I think it was more of a specific reading disability. For instance, I saw was and saw God and dog. Oil and 710, to me, were the same. If you think it's all spatial reference problem. Now I think they just lump everything into, if you have a reading problem, it's dyslexia, and I believe it's a spatial reference problem. You're talking about the visual. You know, I got over it with Orton-Gillingham, like your person there talked about. But it was a long haul. But I kind of resent now being a dyslexic. I kind of see everybody just says if you have trouble reading, you're dyslexic, and I think there's many reading disabilities out there. But to me, I think the English are kind of do this way is dyslexia is a real specific reading problem to me.
Well, we should definitely talk about that, Ken. And Dr. Harker, did you want to jump in on that first? If you have a reading problem, you've got dyslexia.
Ken, thank you for calling in. And your story is, I think, very important. And so as a physician, when I see kids with who are struggling in school, I really need to get to the bottom of what the issue is. Sometimes it looks like something else, but understanding what the problem is gets you to the right solution. And I can talk more about that in a minute.
Okay. Well, and after a break, we'll take a lot more of your questions and comments and dig into this issue of dyslexia. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
Whether you're looking looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one, NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book.
Well, I don't think it's...
Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started...
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, dyslexia. Once described as word blindness, dyslexia affects someone's ability to read accurately and fluently. And as we're finding out, it's surprisingly common. But screening for the condition and intervening early can make a big, big difference. Let's hear from you. Your comments, questions, and of course, personal stories are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Dr. Harker, just before the break, you were responding to a caller who said he had dyslexia and he was frustrated that if anybody has any type of reading difficulty, people automatically say, oh, you're dyslexic.
Yeah. Well, dyslexia is the most common form of reading disability out there, with 70 to 80% of poor readers having dyslexia. So it's actually very common.
So it's not a bad assumption, but...
But it is important to have a full evaluation to know what the issue is that the child is dealing with. For my daughter, she presented with inattention issues at school. So her teachers thought she had ADHD, and we did the evaluation, and she didn't have that. She had dyslexia. But inattention can show up in so many ways, from... anxiety, it can be from bullying at school, it could be from dyslexia, but it could be a lot of different things, and we need to really root it out and figure out what the issue is so that Ken and others can get the right type of help that's going to be most useful for them.
So as a doctor, it sounds like you're approaching patients differently now, given your understanding. If a mom brings a son in and says, I think he has ADD, you dig a little further and you say, no, he has dyslexia and here's how you can help him.
Yeah, my daughter, Paloma, has made me a better doctor, and she gave me permission to come on the air and talk about her story, because it really is her story and my story as a parent working with her. But I'm a better doctor because of my daughter.
Well, and if someone thought that their kid had ADD and was not properly diagnosed as dyslexic, they might end up taking, you know, Ritalin or some of the drug that they don't need. So that's not helpful.
And that wouldn't help dyslexia.
Again, the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Here's one from Tom, who I think I'm going to throw this to you, Renee, who says, can you ask your guests what role early diagnosis plays in management of the effects of dyslexia? Tom says, we have a daughter who is highly intelligent, and her tenacity masked the symptoms from teachers, tutors, and even her parents, Tom says, for many years. We finally received proper testing, and she's doing exceptionally well in college today. Congratulations, Tom, and thank you for the email. What do you think, Renee?
Absolutely. What a great question. And the answer is it's critical. Early detection is critical. So we are in the educational system. We see the symptoms, like I said, when students are in first grade and they are struggling. And when you're struggling to read, that's reading failure, but it's school failure, because that's what the entire school day is. So we know through science and technology, we can really identify these students in preschool and kindergarten. And so that early detection is critical, because we do know the problem grows.
Well, and grows to the point where, like the man that you talked about earlier, Ann, who was a truck driver, got a new route, couldn't read the new signs, and lost his job. So it spirals down the road.
That's absolutely right. It does. And it also takes longer to remediate, the longer you wait to start that process. I mean, part of it's because the child has simply fallen so far behind, unable to access grade-level curriculum, but also building terrible habits. So if you can get in on it early, and I guess I can't emphasize enough that multisensory structured instruction that is so critically important for individuals with dyslexia isn't going to hurt anybody. So it's not as though if you had someone who was having trouble in school and you delivered this kind of instruction that it would somehow harm them if they turned out not to be dyslexic. It wouldn't. It would still be effective.
Let's take another call. This is Jennifer in Concord. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much. I really enjoy your show.
Good.
I just wanted to point out that particularly in the beginning of the show, some of the phrases and terminology for dyslexia were sort of focused around a problem or a real issue with that person in and of itself. And I am a dyslexic. I was diagnosed late. And I would say the problem or the issue was just that no one understood the difference. I don't have a problem. I'm just different. And I have gone on to be very successful. I was that tenacious student in high school. And at that point in time, I thought because I had a problem, I wasn't going to be able to be successful. And I actually have developed skills from my dyslexia that have allowed me to excel in other areas. So I just wanted to make sure that we're keeping the terminology sort of more neutral rather than problematic.
Well, and Jennifer, that's a good point. And you talked about this, Marisol, just how seeing things differently, maybe it slows you down because you don't read as quickly. But on the other hand, you see things that I don't see.
Yes. And going back to her comments, being in school at a young age and being told you have dyslexia, when kids know that, they're going to tease you because, yes, you are different. School sometimes can be the worst place to be different.
Mm. Oh, Marisol.
Sorry.
No, it brings up, it's hard to be teased in school. It's heartbreaking.
And, you know, teachers use the terminology retarded, and students would hear that and think, she's got a problem. She can't read. What's wrong with her?
Right.
So, sorry.
You know what? I'm going to let you just rest for a bit, but I'm so glad that you mentioned that. It is absolutely heartbreaking to be teased in school about anything. Your haircut, the fact that you can't read, the fact that your pants are too short. Go ahead, Dr. Harker.
So, Marisol, thank you for sharing that. And that really is very similar to how my daughter felt. She had a lot of self-doubt. And I think our listener, Jennifer, brings up a really good point that it's easy to look at this in the deficit to see what the problems are. And for me, I apologize if I kind of had a negative view on dyslexia at the beginning or if my words implied that. But what I was trying to say is that my daughter was having a really hard time at school.
It's a challenge you had to work through, for
right.
sure.
And so I saw her struggling because she wasn't getting what she needed. And when she got what she needed, things got better. And as a parent, I felt really alone. I didn't know how to help her. And I didn't feel better until I read a book by Ben Foss, another Granite Stater. He wrote the book called The Dyslexia Empowerment Plan. It's a blueprint for renewing your child's confidence and love of learning. And when I read that, I saw hope for my daughter because before I was lost. And so Ben Foss is a dyslexic. He talks about his challenges and his successes, how he went to college. And so seeing those positive mentors and people who are actually being successful, like Jennifer has been, have been transformative for my family and for my daughter. So she can see, okay, I'm not the dumbest one in the classroom. I am smart. I can do things. I just need to learn in a different way. And her dyslexia, she sees it as a strength now. There's challenges that come with it. There's no doubt about that. But she is proud of who she is, which is why she lets me come on the air and talk about it.
Yeah, well, and, you know, the emotion that we see from Marisol, and, you know, Marisol, thank you so much for being here. It's not easy. And you're, you know, here you are, you're, you know, young adult, you're fabulous, you're successful, you know, and yet, you know, Renee, the teasing in school is relentless. And, I mean, my kids do not have reading disorders, but one of my sons has been struggling in pre-algebra. And, you know, he's thinking, what's wrong with me? And why don't I get it? And, you know, it's a struggle.
Absolutely.
You don't want to be different, especially in middle school, for goodness sake.
Absolutely. So this is where, you know, we really in our educational system, we need to do better because this is heartbreaking. We do hear it every day. And as your caller, Jennifer, said, this is a difference. It's a difference in the brain, and we know exactly what to do with it. Our research has told us this is what we need to allow these students to learn to read and avoid these insurmountable obstacles. So that's where we need to do better.
I mean, you need to use words like neurodiverse, not retarded, which kids still use.
Absolutely.
To describe somebody who's
because,
struggling.
Because, again, as I mentioned earlier, early on in the grades, reading failure for so many of our students is school failure. And when you're young, you can't compartmentalize and say, well, I'm bad at that, but I'm really good at these other things. So this defines them early on, and they do see themselves as failures.
Well, and Jennifer, to your point that this is not necessarily a problem, capital P, but something different, and that helps you look at things differently. We've got a great email here from Rachel in Manchester. She says, I was lucky to be identified early as a dyslexic, and my family had the resources for my mom to train and tutor me in multisensory reading. Rachel says, this intervention began in first grade and made all the difference since I was able to keep up with my classmates. But listen to this. Rachel says, I'm currently an entomology major at Cornell University. My dyslexia impacts me today, mainly in my spelling, and makes learning Latin names of insects more difficult. But there she is at Cornell. Good for you, Rachel. My question for you, Anne, I think is, you know, again, Marisol talked about just how hard it was to be that different kid. You're working at Parker Academy, where obviously everybody's in tune with these sorts of issues. But I wonder what you hear from students who come to Parker from the regular school system about just how classmates and teachers were able to deal with this.
Well, it's it's different from student to student, but the one consistent theme is that these kids felt different, they felt let down, and they felt ashamed. Every kid wants to be able to be successful at their job, and their job is school for 12 plus years. So the kids I work with would not be at this school if their issues weren't pretty significant. These schools carry very hefty price tags. Work I do is all individual. I'm working with a girl right now who, when she was evaluated, was described as an educational emergency. She was a ninth grader who was reading at about second or third grade level. Now, she has worked really hard, and she's very proud of herself, and I'm very proud of her. She has had, I just got her testing scores recently, that the testing that the school does for everybody, and she's just, you know, popping up from like the 4th percentile to the 17th percentile. Okay, that's still, you know, not fabulous, but we've only just begun. And she anticipates that she'll be able to, you know, graduate with her own class in her own school in a couple of years. So there's that incredible sense of achievement and validation of their learning difference, their different style, when you provide the right kind of instruction, but they come with baggage.
Well, as Jennifer said, and boy, I can see everybody wants to jump in. Jennifer, thank you. Your comment raised a lot of conversation. Real quick, Dr. Harker, and then Renee.
I would just say that mentoring is really important. There's an organization called Eye to Eye, which pairs young children with dyslexia with college kids with dyslexia so that they can learn from each other and see that success is possible. And Paloma went to one of their summer camps. I know there's a chapter in Keene, and it's for her to see that people can be successful really brings some of that stress down and say, okay, I can get through this. They got through it, so can I.
So, yeah, you see you're in third grade, you're struggling, people make fun of you, like Marisol, and then you go to a camp and you see these wonderful college students, you know, like Rachel, who's studying at Cornell. So real quick, Renee, and then back to our listeners.
Sure. So I was going to say, what I hear from many of my students is that often there's no relief during the school day. Mm. So we've talked about they're not understood by their peers, they're failing when other students are getting this. But unfortunately, they're often still not understood by the educators. So the adults, the teachers don't always understand this. And my students get notes, you know, red X's all the way down the page with, did you study? Try harder. So being misunderstood by the peers and the adults, I think, is appalling.
Well, and maybe in a minute we'll talk about what's available for people who can't afford the hefty price tags. Because, you know, if your kid needs help and you can't afford a Parker Academy, what do you do? But let's go back to our listeners. Lots of people want to jump in. And Chuck is waiting in Lee. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to make a comment. I was diagnosed with dyslexia in first grade, and I've had special teachers on elementary school, and right now I'm 51. I'm a physical therapist assistant, and I basically read and write like a third grader. So I've been using dictation software and screen reading software to do my paperwork. But one of the things that I don't think you've addressed is as an adult who's married and doesn't read and write very well, it's been quite a burden on my wife and my family to help me with, you know, taking care of paperwork. It's also a struggle for me to walk into somewhere where I need to fill out forms and that kind of thing. So I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Well, yeah, that it's ongoing, Chuck. And thank you so much for calling. And Marisol, boy, there are a lot of forms in life. Insurance forms, forms at the doctor. Once you have children, there's a gazillion forms that you have to fill out for the school. I just wonder how you work your way through that.
Well, luckily, I have an extremely intelligent fiance to help me out. if there are words on a insurance form or something that I don't quite understand, I'll have to, you know, pull up Google, look up the word. But in that process, I'm learning to sound out the word using Orton-Gillingham, which is how I was able to learn how to read, if you will. And I then have to look at the definition. I have to read the definition. And if there are any words in that definition I don't understand, then I then have to look up that word. And luckily, Google has the sound it out feature. So once it sounded out, I'm like, oh, I know that word. But there are times where I'll have to refer to it and be like, hey, what does this word mean in this particular sentence? Mm-hmm. I don't quite understand how or why this fits here. This doesn't make sense to me. I haven't seen this before. Or if I have seen it, I haven't properly internalized it. So luckily, I have help. I'm never going to stop asking for help because dyslexia doesn't go away. It's always going to be there. But I'm learning how I can change how I approach dyslexia, even as an adult.
Well, it's interesting. You and Chuck talked about getting some help from technology, just having mm-hmm. that Google pronunciation there. So, all right. Thank you, Chuck, for the call. And Sarah's in Contoocook. Hi, Sarah. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Laura, for taking my call. I
sure.
love your show. I'm from a very long line of dyslexic. My dad's father was diagnosed when he was in first or second grade. And then my father, the same thing. And when my older brother was about two, he was part of a study by a local college about dyslexia passed through the males in a family. And my parents, watching him reacting to the testing, decided they could see his dyslexia and that they weren't going to put him through school. So they homeschooled him, and all three of my brothers were dyslexic as well. So my sister and I were you know, able to learn sort of more neurotypically, but all three of my brothers experienced that. And I'm just curious if your guest can comment on the dyslexia, the possibility of it being passed generationally, especially as my family experienced.
All right. And thank you for the call. Anybody know, Anne, is dyslexia, does it run through families?
It's absolutely considered to be a genetic link in dyslexia. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have a parent who has dyslexia. You sometimes look at the extended family and you'll find other individuals who may or may not have had trouble reading overtly, but they may be lousy spellers. You often hear, my dad's a lousy speller. And then the child presents with much more extensive language issues.
You know, it's interesting, too. She talked about her brothers. And Renee, we sometimes read that boys are more likely to be given individual learning plans at school or diagnosed with some sort of learning disorder. Does dyslexia affect boys more than girls or girls more than boys? Or do we know? Dr. Harker, do you know?
I think there is it's more common for boys than for girls, but not by much. And so, and as we have on the show, we have Marisol, we have my daughter.
Right, you know. And Anne's daughter, and so.
So I think it's an equal opportunity brain difference. It certainly can run in families. So if you have someone in your family, and this is actually one of the points Paloma wanted me to make, if someone in your family has dyslexia and you have a child that's having a hard time early in school with reading, check it out, get evaluated.
Renee?
So I think this is a little bit tricky because we said when the students are failing in school, sometimes secondary behaviors kick in.
Acting
and so,
out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so maybe we have some girls who are sitting in class failing, but they're quieter about it.
I have heard that. Yes. All right. Well, thank you for that call, Sarah. And we'll be back in just a minute. So stay with us.
You're looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one, NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book.
Well, I don't think it's...
Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started...
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we are trying to understand dyslexia, looking at how it affects people's ability to understand words and the best techniques to help people work through this reading disorder. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have four guests. Ann Eaton is here, reading tutor at Parker Academy. Dr. Travis Harker is here. He's a family doctor at the Family Health Center in Concord. He has talked a lot about his daughter's experience with dyslexia. Renee LeCain is here, owner and director of Language, Literacy, and Learning. And also Marisol Vincent. She's been talking about her own struggles with dyslexia as a child. Marisol went on to figure this out. She went to college. She now has a career. Let's hear from you. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And let's go next to Elsa in Antrim. Hi, Elsa. Thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Elsa.
I guess I can start out saying I'm pretty sure I'm dyslexic. I've always had trouble. Both my children were diagnosed early on in school. I think phonics helps a lot. But I'm part of a church group who's been working on prison issues, and I was shocked to find out there's a huge percentage of prisoners that are dyslexic. And it makes sense. If you can't read, you don't get a good job, and you have hard time excelling. But what horrified me more is that I believe it was the federal government, goes and finds out how many middle schoolers are dyslexic, and that's how they plan how many jail cells to have.
Wow. Well, Elsa, that's pretty chilling, and I'm glad you called because, we've been talking a lot about, the great successes that people have when they figure out this neurodiversity and they figure out how to work with it and they figure out that there are advantages, as you described, Dr. Harker. But what do you think, Renee? There's this other side that, if you don't get it early on, you could run into some real trouble.
Yes, absolutely. So we do have some numbers that tell us if your reading is not on grade level by third grade, it's very unlikely that we can close that gap without an intensive systematic effort. So we also talked about dyslexia as being a diverse group. So some are very athletic, some are not. Some are born into poverty and some are not. And we do know that as you look at those factors and have more contributing factors, so dyslexia plus economically disadvantaged, those things start to add up. And when you graduate, you do not have many choices.
Well, I'm glad you called, Elsa, because this gets to something I wanted to ask you. And, what if you come from a poor family and you have reading difficulties and your parents can't afford to send you to a pricey reading program?
It's certainly a conundrum. Every student in this country is certainly entitled to a free and appropriate public education. While many, many children with dyslexia do not require special education services, they could be given the instruction they need right within the context of a general classroom. There are some students, if you wait long enough to intervene or if their issues are severe enough, do require the specialized instruction, and they need it every day. And ideally, if it's presented by teachers who all understand multisensory teaching. Some students who come to independent schools are placed there, are tuition being paid by parents. Others are placed there by their school districts and out-of-district placements because the school feels that they don't have the staff available to meet that child's particular learning needs. And so some of the students I work with are district placed. Some of the students I work with are privately funded.
District placed means, again, the public schools are paying for that child to be there because they just don't have what that person needs.
That's correct.
So this gets to the law that you helped promote last year and, again, really flew under the radar because there was a lot of other news stories going on last year. What does that law require the state and local districts to do, Anne?
Well, House Bill 1644 became New Hampshire's dyslexia law. It defines dyslexia as a starting point, and then it also requires districts to screen for dyslexia in kindergarten and first grade and to provide age-appropriate, evidence-based instruction for students who are identified as being at risk of having reading difficulties. The law also creates an education consultant position within the Department of Education, and that individual was to be responsible for supporting school districts and families in understanding what dyslexia is and how to teach to dyslexia, to produce a resource guide. It would be published online on the DOE's website for use by districts and families, and then also to collaborate with the Teacher Training Council. It's an organization created by statute to work with colleges and universities who are involved in teacher training programs. Our situation right now is pretty bleak about the level of teacher training as it relates to dyslexia and the evidence-based instructional methods that are appropriate.
So, and we did some research on this yesterday, that position has not been filled. And
no.
What about local districts? And everybody wants to jump in. But what about local districts? How well are they doing so far following this new law that says, look, you have to do the screening and you have to have what you called age-appropriate evidence-based instruction? How well are they doing?
Well, the law takes effect this year.
This year.
The districts are facing a November 30th deadline for screening all kindergartners and first graders. And then by January, providing this instruction. I am candidly concerned. I should explain that I am on the board of directors of the New Hampshire branch of the International Dyslexia Association, and in that role, I am candidly concerned about the availability of fully trained teachers to provide this kind of intervention. There is training out there that's available, but many teachers, with the best of intentions, pursue a 15-hour course. It's intended to provide an overview, but they don't go the next step in getting the more in-depth instruction that they're going to need to work with the severely afflicted kiddos.
Well, and if I were a school district, I would say this is yet another unfunded mandate, and of course I want to help kids as best I can, but, you know, state, you got to stop passing these laws that tell me, the school district, to do all this stuff and not give me the resources to do it.
Right. If I could just continue, the screening tools are relatively inexpensive or free. The instruction will cost, but compared to the cost of special education, if you're looking at a $50,000 a year tuition bill and transportation costs that are just as high, training a handful of teachers to a level that will allow them to present this instruction with fidelity is really just... it's a savings.
Yeah, so deal with it now, locally, at the school, and you'll avoid having to do out-of-placement costs or, as Elsa talked about, you know, prison costs down the line. I can see you want to jump in. Dr. Harker, go ahead.
So I'm actually I share some of Anne's concerns, but I'm very excited about this bill and this law now because if Paloma had been identified earlier, her teaching would have changed, and she would have gotten what she needed. So I'm really excited by that. If you pair that also what happened in the U.S. Supreme Court in the past couple weeks, where they had an 8-0 decision supporting special education, saying we can't do the minimum for our kids. We have to actually challenge them and push them to reach the best of their abilities. And so I think those two things paired together are setting things up very well for kids to have the type of legal protections that they need, the type of screening that they need to do well. Districts will have to grow and will have to adjust to that. And I think that's critically important. The other thing is that parents need to be actively engaged in the process. And federal law allows for that, encourages parents to be in part of the process to develop their education plans for their kids. And what helped me tremendously was the New Hampshire Parent Information Center. They provide lots of information. And without them, I would have been lost at the IEP meetings or the individualized education programs. And so I think parents can go there and also to understood.org, which has tremendous resources about working in special education, understanding your child and the struggles that they're having, or seeing that the strengths that they have as well.
Well, and we'll put links on our website to all that. But as I'm sure everybody here knows, and Renee, I'll ask you, you know, the special education laws at the federal level now, New Hampshire has long complained that only, you know, 40% or something of the funding that is supposed to come to the state for special ed actually comes. So that's been a long struggle for the state to get the money that is promised federally, and it doesn't come.
Absolutely. So, and that is a complicated topic. I think on the flip side of that is there's a lot of information, there's a lot of misinformation. And as these students progress through the grades, it costs more money. So we do need those funds, but if we catch these students early, as Anne was saying, in preschool, kindergarten, first grade, what our dyslexic students need looks a lot like instruction that would benefit every single child sitting in those classrooms. So it becomes more specialized, the intensity changes as they progress, but it costs less to do it sooner.
Kind of the point that Anne made earlier. Let's go to Heartland, Vermont, where Kathy is on the line. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if your guest could say a little bit about when and how to tell a child they have dyslexia. And then my second question is about terminology. Our school doesn't seem to want to use the word dyslexia. They use sort of specialized reading disabilities, and it's not, I don't understand why that is.
Well, these are great questions. And Marisol, what do you think? We've talked a lot about labels and so forth.
I think it's really important for parents to understand that when you tell your child that there's something going on with them, to not pose it as, do you have an issue? To pose it as, hey,
like you, have
you
a
do
bad
this
disease
differently.
Or something.
Yeah, you do this. This is just different. And being different isn't bad. Having this isn't bad. I think it's definitely important to tell your children early on so that they don't learn later in life to gain confidence in what they're doing. And so for me, example, I've always been pretty confident. My mom is an extremely strong woman, as Annie knows. And so I got really lucky. But a lot of the people around me didn't get that confidence boost early on. And when teachers and parents aren't there to encourage you, you're kind of lost. And you really don't want to have young kids getting lost. So I think it's really important to do it early on.
So the label, Anne, is okay, but you got to do it the right way.
Sure. I mean, there are all kinds of labels, right?
I like neurodiverse, actually,
yeah,
which is what Dr. Harker said.
Sure, but and we have labels in all kinds of different parts of our lives. And dyslexia doesn't have to be a negative connotation. It's simply, at least I hope with our daughter, we explained that it was difference. It was simply a difference. And again, that wonderful tutor she had who said to her, you will learn. You will learn to read. You will learn to write. You simply will learn differently. It set her free.
Well, here's an email from Nancy in Deerfield. My son could not read in the second grade. The school finally tested him and diagnosed him with a, quote, other special learning disability and put him in a multisensory program. Now in fifth grade, he reads at better than grade level and his program is ending. We've been told in New Hampshire we don't test for dyslexia. Should he be tested? Are there other techniques that might help him? Nancy says he is bright, but I know he compensates in many classes, not just reading. Nancy, thank you so much for the email. Dr. Harker, can you jump in? It sounds like he's doing well, but now that he's moving up in his school years, he's not going to be tested.
Nancy, thank you for the email. I think that if you as a parent have concerns, you should raise those with your teachers, or your child's teachers, because you might be seeing something that they're not, or they might be minimizing something that might be real. So if you have a concern, you should ask for testing. If they're doing well in all domains and your child is happy and you're comfortable with it and the teachers are, then maybe you don't need to do additional testing. But if you have something in you that says something might not be right here, or my child is struggling more than I think that he or she ought to, then certainly asking for that's important.
Renee, I wonder what sort of advice you would give parents who are listening. You know, Dr. Harker talked earlier where he said, you know, he said to his daughter originally, just try harder or focus more. What advice would you give parents?
So number one, get informed. You know, get on the internet, go to understood.org, get the good information that's out there, and then really listen to your child. Students don't want to fail. So if your child is coming home and avoiding homework and not doing well, I think it's critical that we don't assume everything's going to be okay.
Do you want to jump in on that, Marisol? I think your mom was an amazing woman.
Yeah, my mom's a realist, so she had that same kind of approach that this, you know, right now, no, it's not okay. Like, yes, you are struggling, but like Annie's tutor said to her daughter, you will learn to do it. Like, dyslexia is not a stint, if you will, on my intelligence. Like, it doesn't make me less intelligent. So, yeah, there is some failures with communicating it. But I think it's important to make sure it's communicated properly.
Well, here's an email from Vin, who kind of expresses what you said earlier, Marisol, about how you have to work through those words and punctuation. On the other hand, you see things differently. Vin says, one of the best high school English students I know was dyslexic. He had a tougher time with spelling than almost anyone I ever taught. Yet, he was a wonderful poet, majored in English, of all things, at Princeton, and has gone on to be a university English professor. Author John Irving, Vin says, is dyslexic. Is there something that dyslexic kids bring to words that also gives them a different insight into them? And I think you would say, yes, Marisol.
Yeah. Like I said before, I internalize words a lot differently. And in high school, I was introduced to the author Carl Hiaasen. Hopefully I'm saying his last name right.
Oh, he's very funny. Yes. Florida author.
Yes. And his book, Sick Puppy. And honestly, if I hadn't gotten the proper training that I had, I don't think I would have been able to connect well with that book. And that book really sparked my interest in reading and wanting to learn more, and pushed me to be more successful in high school. And I think, I've lost my train of thought, that with that push, I learned to succeed in other areas. I learned to push myself in other areas because I could connect with a book. So I was able to move on to college, where I studied photography, and I looked at the text a different way. I learned to interpret things a different way. So I made photos differently. I may have not been the best photographer, but I made photos that meant something to me and meant a lot to other people. And I look at the world a completely different way because I look at words differently.
Here's another email. This person didn't give a name. I have an older brother who struggled with dyslexia his entire life. Our mother had to fight the system to get him help when the school just wanted to dump him into the, quote, special classroom. This was in the late 60s. This person says, he's gotten by, but I always wonder what he could accomplish if he learned to overcome this. He's brilliant. And here's a tweet that came in just at the last minute from Brian, who says, your young guest should know New Hampshire supports you and is proud of you. I think that's for you, Marisol.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And everybody, this has been super interesting. A lot of people want to jump in on this, so clearly we hit a nerve today. Dr. Harker, it's good to see you, as always.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Travis Harker, family doctor at the Family Health Center in Concord. Again, if you want to see a short video on his family's experience with dyslexia, go to our website, nhpr.org/exchange. We'll put other resources there, too, that came up during our program. Renee LeCain, great to meet you. Thank you also for being here.
Thank you for this opportunity.
And also Ann Eaton, wonderful to see you. Thank you also.
Thanks for having us.
And Marisol, thanks again for sharing your story.
Appreciate it very much.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.